This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to the Evening Edition with Richard and Uma, and it's that time of month when we talk a little science. Joining us, as always, is our resident science correspondent, Fabienne Bouyer. Welcome to the show, Fabienne.
Thank you very much for having me again, guys.
So over the last few months, we've spoken to you about the science of Interstellar, of Santa Claus, of Back to the Future. We've talked about some pretty complex ideas, time travel, quantum string theory, teleportation, black holes. But the one thing we haven't done is actually talk about the basics. So today, we're going to take a look at the world around us. We're going to talk about all those things we should know about the world we live in, but don't.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to be talking about magnetism, we're going to be talking about nuclear forces, and of course, the grand old Newton's laws of motion. I think we're going to kick us off with magnetism, right? Now, the idea of magnetism is familiar with any child who's been in front of a refrigerator. I think anyone who's taken those magnets off the fridge and kind of played with it and have it repel one another knows the general idea of how it works. But describing it can confound even the most brilliant physicists. Now, there's this great video with Richard Feynman, probably one of the greatest contemporary physicists, and he was asked to explain magnetism, and he urged, in the end, his BBC interviewer to take it on faith. Here, just have a listen for yourself.
If you get hold of two magnets and you push them, you can feel this pushing between them. Turn it around the other way and they slam together. Now, what is it, the feeling between those two magnets?
What do you mean, what's the feeling between the two magnets?
There's something there, isn't there? I mean, the sensation is that there's something there when you push these two magnets together.
Listen to my question. What is the meaning when you say that there's a feeling? Of course you feel it. Now, what do you want to know?
What I want to know is what's going on
the magnets
between these two bits of metal.
The magnets repel each other.
And, well, then what does that mean, or why are they doing that, or how are they doing it? I must say, I think that's a perfectly reasonable question.
Of course it's an excellent question. Okay.
Now, after 7 minutes of stonewalling, he finally said, I can't really do a good job, any job of explaining magnetic force in terms of something else that you're more familiar with, because I don't understand it in terms of anything else that you're more familiar with.
But I really can't do a good job, any job, of explaining magnetic force in terms of something else that you're more familiar with, because I don't understand it in terms of anything else that you're more familiar with.
Today, however, we have Fabienne.
We'll try to match that expectation.
No pressure, Fabienne.
No pressure.
So, right. Talk us through, I guess, the basic idea of magnetism.
Well, magnetism has a great story behind it, I guess. So I think we should start, if we're going to start with the basics.
So we're rewinding in time.
Exactly. We're going back through time. So 100 years ago, right, there is this city in Greece called Magnesia. And if they were facing a problem, is all their ships were basically sinking. Every time they had merchandise coming to town, the boat were sinking. So they were trying to figure out what happened. And then they realized that at the bottom of the sea, they had lodestone. And the lodestone has the property of attracting iron.
Right.
So they were pulling the nails of the ships, basically, and the ship was sinking at the bottom of the sea.
Now, you can imagine at that point, people were, like, blaming other things for it.
Absolutely.
It could have been the gods who were, like, you know, angry, mad at us.
Yeah,
or
exactly.
We're delivering the wrong thing to the port. But it comes down to a very basic scientific, well, not basic, but a scientific explanation, right?
But it took them a while to realize that. So after that, once they identified lodestone, they realized that lodestone had different properties because it could actually attract different metals. There are three types of metals that, you know, magnets can attract. So it's iron, cobalt, and nickel. So basically, lodestones were made out of magnets and they were attracting the nails, which were made of iron. So that mystery was basically, you know, closed. So that's one of the properties of magnets. They actually attract other metals.
Wait a second. I need to rewind. You're telling me that there's three metals that are magnetic?
Yes.
Because for my entire adult life, I never knew that nickel was magnetic. I never knew that.
That's why we're here.
Right.
Now you know.
I never, you know, so, and I pride myself of being a man of science. And now I'm like, suddenly I'm 5 years old again. Thank
you, Fabienne. It's beautiful, isn't it?
Right.
You're almost welcome.
So am I right in thinking, Fabienne, that nobody knows what what makes a lodestone, right? It's just there. It's a naturally occurring...
It's one of the minerals, yeah.
Yeah, it's just a naturally occurring phenomenon. We don't know why that particular rock is magnetic.
No.
Okay.
That's cool. One of the mystery of the Earth, I guess.
Okay, fair enough.
But it was probably made, you know, through that process of, you know, because the Earth is basically a giant magnetic field as well. I will explain that in details later. But, you know, when the Earth was created, you know, iron was made, and it was probably, you know, they were made in the form of a stone, right? So,
okay,
we can't really explain that.
That's the history then.
That's for the history and the property number one,
okay,
which is that magnets attract three types of metal, right? So the second one is quite funny, is that they have poles. So if you let's imagine mm-hmm. a magnet bar like a sneaker bar.
Okay.
Right.
I can see that.
Right, you can see that?
I'm almost tasting it.
All right, cool, perfect. So they have poles. So at the end of the extremity, every extremity, sorry, is going to point towards north, and the opposite is going to point towards south. So it took them a while to actually realize that, but that was how the first compass was created, because they put, you know, the magnets, the piece of lodestone on a cork and balanced it on the water, and they knew they were going north.
Uh-huh.
So that was they were using the stars and the sun before, but now they had another mean to actually be more accurate with navigation.
I remember how excited I was the first time we did that experiment in school.
Yeah,
because that's an experiment all of us have to do, right? You take a magnet, you stick it in a cork, put it in water, it floats around, and then it's supposed to point north. And then your teacher goes, "Well, take a compass and come look." And you're like,
right.
"Oh my god, this is amazing!"
Awesome. Yeah. Right, it is awesome.
There was that one, and the one where you put the magnet down and you threw iron filings down, and it showed you around it.
Right, and it forms the magnetic waves, which are very, very cool as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely, yes.
That's a good point. So magnetism, it comes in waves then? Is that something we know? Or is that something we're kind of unsure of as we
So there is, there are ways. So, you know, like, that's when you go down to the quantum mechanics, is actually they have both properties like light. It's just at the moment you make the observation, the wave collapses into one reality. So that's something, you know, it's very different. But usually it's a wave, the way you see it, right? The magnetic field. The reason why the compass is basically pointing north is because the core of a planet is made of iron. So iron is the last element to be made on the periodic table. You can't make more stuff out of iron. That's the last one.
Right.
That we know of.
Yeah.
So far. So that's why it's such a giant magnetic field that actually every metal is pointing towards the north.
Right. So we've covered two properties. Are there any more? So we've got they attract the
right.
three metals.
They point north.
They point north.
Right, so now let's go back to that sneaker bar. If you break that sneaker bar, it will create two more magnets. Right, so it's not like they're going to break and then, you know, they're going to be able to be reassembled
right,
together.
Right,
you can't do that because the same pole actually repelled each other, and opposite poles attract each other. So those are the two last properties. So there's four properties of magnetism.
Very, very cool. Now, very quickly, Fabian, before we move on to forces of the nuclear variety, talk to us about one of the most common uses of magnetism that we should know about.
I'll say that everything that's wave-based, so the GPS, the way that even microwaves, they're all using some kind of magnetic field. So the magnets are all involved into that process of even transmitting information and so on. But everyday use, right now you're on your computer, people are in their cars listening to the radio. The radio waves, right, are being transmitted through satellites. All that technology today is using magnetism somehow.
Right. And even going backwards, in the old days when we had tapes, they're all magnetic.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
I've got a little fun fact for you, though, before we go to a song. Microbes, birds, and some other animals have magnetic crystals inside their bodies that allow them to orient themselves, which is probably why loggerhead turtles can migrate 8,000 miles in unfamiliar waters.
Amazing, isn't it?
Right. You and me, we get lost on the way to the toilet. Right? That's incredible. So we're talking basic, physics basics, right? We've got magnetism. After this, nuclear forces with Fabien Bouyer, our science geek and regular correspondent. You're listening to The Evening Edition on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. This is the evening edition. Richard and Uma with you. Joining us today for our monthly science segment is Fabienne Bouyer. And, you know, we're taking a break from black holes and time travel, which we've done over the last few months. We're taking you back to school. For physics, we've decided we haven't actually spoken about the 101. And so many of us live in this modern world. We use cell phones, we use GPS, we use cars, we use microwaves, we use all of this technology, and we've lost that sense of curiosity as to how it works, why it works, right? And so Fabienne spent the last 10 minutes talking about magnetism and how it affects our day-to-day life. You're going to talk to us about nuclear forces. And I guess it's one of the four fundamental forces of nature, right?
Absolutely.
It is one of those things as well, though, but when you mention the word nuclear, for a lot of people, they have that image of the mushroom cloud, and, you know, it kind of has a negative connotation almost, but it's not like that. You know, we have nuclear fusion, we have... Fabienne, you take it away.
So first, let's talk about the forces themselves. So you've got two forces, the weak and the strong. The weak forces says that everything decays. So everything is bound to rot, to die, to basically disintegrate at some point in life. So it's a little bit like an Alka-Seltzer. You put it into the water and it kind of like dissolves itself, right? So that's basically the property of the weak nuclear force. The strong is what bounds the atoms together. So it's very difficult to break that bond. So that's why, you know, it's difficult to smash atoms with each other.
Right.
So you need to make sure they're hot enough and they are traveling at some certain speed to make sure that they actually break that force and then fuse together, right?
Which for some people would seem odd, because it's like the bigger things break easy, but the smaller things take a lot more power.
Absolutely. Incredible power, as a matter of fact. So it's very interesting to see that. So that's why now you mentioned earlier that, you know, people are scared when we talk about nuclear fusion and fission. So I think it's important to make the distinctions between the two processes.
Agreed.
So nuclear fission is basically what we're using today. And the problem with it is it's very, very polluting. So a lot of people, there is a lot of wastage. We saw, like, in Japan a couple years back with the earthquake, all the waste going to the sea. So it's quite dangerous, right? And the thing is, you need to have plutonium and uranium, which are finite resources on Earth.
Cannot be recycled.
Cannot be recycled. So at some point, we're going to run out. Right? It's like an old car running out of fuel at some point, right? So the process is basically smashing neutrons. So let's say, like, you have that big ball and you're trying to cut it in half, right? So you try to cut it in half, and then the half cut in half and the half cut in half. The more halves you cut, it creates energy on the way.
Aha.
Okay? And it creates a chain reaction. That's why we call the nuclear chain reaction.
Yep.
So that creates energy, actually an incredible amount of energy. But the problem is it leaves...
Byproduct
behind, right? And it's a finite... It's a resource of energy. So at some point, we're going to run out.
But nuclear fusion, on the other hand, is a naturally occurring event as well. I mean, it occurs in our sun, in the stars.
That's how our star, the sun, is running today. It's basically at the core, you have atoms of hydrogen traveling at incredible speed, and they smash each other. When they smash each other, they create helium, right? But when they create helium, there is a little waste that is being generated. It's like something that, you know, pops out during the process. And that little particle is what create nuclear fusion. So by fusioning molecules of hydrogen, you create huge amount of energy. But the problem is, like, we don't have a cost-effective way to produce nuclear fusion. It's just at the theoretical level right now. We can do it, but the amount of energy we have to put together to basically create the energy...
Makes it inefficient.
Makes it very inefficient.
Right. And the hydrogen isotope is deuterium.
That's for nuclear fusion. Yeah, that's correct. So
Do
you have different kind of hydrogen, and the deuterium is the one they use for nuclear fusion.
Correct. So when we talk about nuclear forces, we are talking about it primarily as a source of energy.
So the forces... is basically what governs the laws of physics. So the weak is decaying, and the strong is what bonds us together. Now we have chain reactions that create energy out of that nuclear process. So that's what fission and fusions are for, to create energy out of it.
So talk to us about the importance of why we should know this.
Because if we can successfully create nuclear fusion, we can change the world. It will be a clean, renewable source of energy, abundant. We won't have to worry about, you know, powering our houses anymore. We won't have to pump up the fuel, the old rigs and all that stuff. We'll not be polluting the earth. Basically, it will stop global warming. It will, you know, it will really help the earth today. Because at the rate we are going now, we're going to reach a threshold when it's too late.
I mean, there's a very big argument saying that nuclear power is the only way that we can go forward into the future and have a reliable, stable source of energy and clean.
Correct. Absolutely. But the problem is, like, right now we are relying too much on nuclear fission, and we're not investing enough money and time, and actually we're not training the minds today to be curious about helping out to develop solutions for nuclear fusion.
And for the rest of you, in case you're wondering, the next time your girlfriend gets mad at you, you can always tell her it's the strong force of nature that pulls you together. We're talking science today. We're taking you to school with physics and Fabien Bouyer. We've covered nuclear forces and magnetism. When we come back, Newton's law of motion. All three of them on the evening edition, BFM 89.9. Good evening, I'm Uma Pagan Amphike Pagan.
And I'm Richard Bradbury.
And we are joined today by Fabien Bouyer. He's our resident science correspondent, because it's that time of month when we're talking science, folks. Science. I think every show we should just say science.
I love the way you do that.
I know, thank you very much.
You do just one more time?
Science.
Can we get a French approach to that?
Science.
Oh, very nice.
Far sexier when he does it.
Way better.
We've been talking about a lot of complex scientific theory. We started doing our shows with Fabien with the science of interstellar. In it, we talked about black holes and decay and quantum time travel and all of that stuff. But we realized that we haven't actually addressed some of the most basic principles of physics that govern our day-to-day.
Yeah. I mean, these are topics that were fascinating to us and stuff that we kind of, you know, we deliberate and we talk about. But there are people that, you know, like you say, need a bit of a 101 sometimes.
And what's more, we've learned all of this in school, but for most of us, we've forgotten. It doesn't stick. It's the kind of thing we study to pass exams, right? One of those things is Newton's laws of motion.
Right.
We learned all three of them in high school.
Yes.
Well, we did those experiments. We did those. We did those silly math problems. If a car's coming at this speed and another car's approaching at this speed, you know.
And you had the swinging
pendulum.
The pendulums.
Thing.
Yes.
You had all of that stuff. But how many of us actually remember all three laws of motion? Fabien, shoot, all three laws of motion. Go.
All right. So we start with the first one. Is the law of inertia. So that's one of my favorite, because it literally states that objects are lazy, right?
I like that.
Love it, because let's say they are in a position right now which they don't move, right? Mm-hmm. So let's say that there is a truck and you try to move the truck. You don't have enough force. You can't apply enough force to move the truck. So it's lazy.
Right.
It's like someone trying to get you're trying to get someone out of the way. They don't want to move, right? Uh-huh. They are lazy. The second law states the exact opposite. Once they start moving, they don't want to stop anymore.
Right.
They want to keep moving, right? So that's why on Earth, when you take a ball, for example, and you roll it on the ground, it's going to keep rolling until someone stops it. So usually it's the ground being a bit rough, or the air resistant, or
friction, or
there is another object coming in its course. But if you take the vacuum of space, for example, if you throw the ball, it will keep on going forever.
That's right. George Clooney gets lost.
Exactly.
In gravity, he just keeps going.
He's probably visiting Jupiter right now.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he can wave at us. But that's the whole point. So that's the beauty of it. The first law states that objects want to stay in the same position they are.
Lazy.
So they're lazy.
An object at rest tends to stay at rest.
Exactly. But once they stop moving, if they don't want to stop anymore. So it's like you wake them up and they're like, okay, let's party, until something stops them.
An object in motion tends to stay in motion.
Absolutely. So that's until something comes in the way.
Right.
So that's pretty much it.
And that, of course, is the formula that a lot of people will remember, the Newton's second law, which is F equals to ma, force equals to mass times acceleration, right? That's one thing that I think was ingrained into us in high school.
Right.
Because we use that formula for everything.
Exactly. So that's not may the force be with you. It's may the force be equal to mass time acceleration. That's the proper way to say it.
So the third law?
So the third law is for every action, there's an equal opposite reaction.
See, I love that phrase. I've always loved it.
I have. Yeah, I've used it on many, many a thing that has nothing to do with physics.
Absolutely.
You're going to tell that story later. So the best example to give for, you know, the audience today is when you're swimming, right? Let's say you are you're doing a race and then you arrive at the end and you need to make a U-turn, right? So basically you push yourself, you know, from the wall. From the wall, and then you're moving forward. So
you kick
the wall to basically swim fast, right? So the idea is when you're pushing with your legs that way from the back, then you're moving forward. So that amount of force is equal. Right? So if you work out the mathematics, it's the same principle with rockets. For it to take off, you need to have a combustion high enough and strong enough to basically enable the rockets to take off.
Right, to push down.
To push down.
Towards the ground.
Towards the ground for it to take off.
Right.
So let's take a swimmer as an example then to apply all three rules of Newton's laws of motion. So as a swimmer, without movement, you would be stuck on the side of the pool. So law one, you're lazy.
Correct.
Law two, which was?
Which was that once you start moving, you want to keep moving.
You want to keep moving. So when you're in the water, the pressure against you, the friction against you would stop you from moving forever up and down that pool.
Exactly.
And the third law is once you've pushed yourself off that wall, you have to apply an equal amount of thrust, which is equal to the amount that you would move forward.
Absolutely.
Minus the amount of friction from the water.
Correct.
Ah, see?
It's very, very cool because the three laws of Newtonian motion, right, basically explain everything that our modern world was built on.
Mm.
From automobiles to rockets, like you said, to things we use on a day-to-day basis. It's the way we tear down buildings. It's the way we put up buildings, right? All of this is kind of directed and determined by these three laws. But yet, we pay such little attention to it. I think if we all learned and memorized these three laws, there would be far fewer car accidents.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Because if you're driving and you're aware that it's raining, then, you know, once you actually hit the brake, it's going to take you more time to actually stop.
Correct.
Right? So that's, but people, they take that for granted. But I would say that if you're aware of this, then you can actually protect yourself from, you know, upcoming danger on the road.
I mean, it sounds like a very simple thing, and it is a very simple thing. And I remember when we did a piece on the Principia a while ago, and we were talking about these, you know, a lot of people didn't want Newton's ideas to be these particular laws. There was a lot of arguments against them, right? It caused a lot of controversy because they thought, well, how can you apply laws to something that is created? That was a big problem.
Yeah, and essentially Newton's law kind of recognized and verified Galileo's concept of inertia. That's what he did, right? He kind of formalized it and formulated it.
Absolutely.
What's interesting, though, is now Newton's law kind of determines a lot of our basic human exploration and progress, right? But it does break down. I mean, sorry, when I say basic human exploration and progress, you know, ever since we set onto the oceans to go exploring, we're using Newton's law. The idea of going to the moon is based very basically on these three laws, right? But it does break down Newton's laws of motion when quantum comes in, doesn't it?
That's correct. So you can explain how big things are moving, but at the atomic level, they behave very differently.
It's so weird down there.
It's very weird.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so even Einstein didn't agree with that at first. He called it spooky action at the distance, something like that. Right? It was really critical. But what I like about Newton is he was early 20s when he came up with this. And then he created calculus on a dare.
Yeah.
And then when he was 26, he came up with the laws of gravity as well, which is, to me, is, you know, quite incredible. At 26, you know, what were we doing?
Well, he didn't get out much, to be fair, did he? I mean, he locked himself in a room for most of his life. You know, he wasn't the most sociable of people.
So I've heard.
Yeah.
You know what the key is, Fabian? we don't have rivals. We don't have arch nemesis anymore.
That's true.
Newton had an arch nemesis. He had someone to channel his technological brain, his scientific brain towards, right, and say, I want to fight you. I want to prove you wrong. I think we're all too happy and get along these days. That's the problem. There's no motivation.
Mm.
No motivation at all.
You could be right.
So Fabian, tell us, why is it important? Other than car accidents and swimming, why should people learn about these three laws of motion? Why should they keep it in mind?
I think it's just being closer to the universe. I think we take those laws for granted every day. And if we want to understand each other, we need to understand how we behave as a society together. And it starts by understanding the laws of physics that governs us as humans. And I think it's very important for us.
I agree.
All right. Well, thank you very much. We've been speaking to Fabien Bouyer. We've been talking about Newton's laws of motion, nuclear forces, and magnetism, folks. We hope that's helped you understand just a little bit the world around you and why we get along the way we do.
And if you don't understand fully, you can follow Fabien on Twitter. You can ask him all of your questions about science, and he will answer. What's your Twitter handle, Fabien?
You can follow me on at BEUFA.
There we go. And you can follow Richard on Mr. Rich and me on at Uma Pagan. And of course, at BFM Radio for everything else. You're listening to the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.